How do you like the sound of a bank that's built for you, not the 1%? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, you should check out Chime. Chime isn't just another banking app. They unlock smarter banking for everyday people with products like MyPay, giving you access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime and getting paid up 2 days early with direct deposit. They also don't charge an overdraft or minimum balance fee, so you're in control of how you spend your money. In fact, there's no monthly fee at all. Instead of charging you to use your own money, Chime actually turns everyday spending into real rewards and progress. It's the new way to build credit history with your own money and get rewarded every single day. Plus, you can earn up to 3% APY on savings, which is 7 times higher than a traditional bank. Several of my mates have already switched to Chime for their everyday spending, and they say that they have never felt more in control of their money. Chime is not just smarter banking, it's the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It just takes a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/redhanded. That's chime.com/redhanded.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, you little sausages. Welcome to our quarterly wrap-ups. You may be well aware that the pubs are starting to open up again. And in celebration of the easing of lockdown, we are bringing you our best bits of Patreon from this month. So we've got a clip from our Under the Duvet, which is our after show. We've got In the News, which is our news segment. And we've also got loads of other shit for you. So have a little listen. And if you feel like you want more of this, you can head on over to patreon.com/redhanded for all of your red-handed Patreon needs. So anyway, let's get back to Kat. So Kat and Jeff, they're living their best life. They're doing all of this. They've got their matching tattoos. They've got their kid. Everything's going well. In addition, and this is when it sort of gets a little bit, I want to say a little bit less all-American-y, but then I kind of feel like, you know, the suburban mums, they're all on like fucking drugs and on OnlyFans now anyway. So I feel like this isn't that weird.
Every single one of them.
All of them. They're just like mad for that fentanyl. They're like, yep, I can afford it. Bring it to me. Sweet. So anyway, Kat, I'm not suggesting Kat was on drugs, by the way. I'm just saying. So Kat was actually, however, on the adult modeling website OnlyFans. Let's talk about what OnlyFans is, like just very briefly for any of our listeners who don't know what it is. OnlyFans, I guess like the best way to describe it is it's like the Patreon of...
It's boob Patreon.
Yeah.
Boob and badge Patreon is what it is. And feet.
Exactly. Exactly. So you can like go find a creator, and Kat's creator name was Kitty Kat West. You go find a creator you like, you can go as niche as you like, et cetera, because there's so much choice. And then you just subscribe to them, and then you get, you know, delicious adult content from your favorite creator. That's the point. And so Kat was on here, and, you know, it did provide a bit of extra income for the family. And also, apparently, Kat really enjoyed doing what she did. She liked all things beauty, like we said, and she actively enjoyed all the attention that she got from posting pictures of herself in her underwear. And occasionally, she would also post pictures of herself on there with absolutely nothing at all. Now, perhaps you're like, what did her husband Jeff think of all of this? Well, apparently, Jeff knew all about Kat's OnlyFans. In fact, he was apparently incredibly supportive, and he even helped Kat take some of the pictures that she posted on there. Kat, who was a self-proclaimed exhibitionist, also had her own website, Twitter, and Instagram. And her Instagram actually had 52,000 followers. that's not an easy feat to achieve.
That's good going.
Yeah, that is very good going. And on this Instagram, she would share racy photos of herself. You know, she used it like a preview marketing page because she'd say, you want to see the full thing? Head on over to OnlyFans. Kind of like how we do with audiograms of Patreon content on our Instagram. So Kat knows what she's doing. And in January 2018, just before she was found dead, the 42-year-old Kat was actually recovering from breast implant surgery that she hoped would boost her figures even more. And on the 12th of January, when presumably she's feeling a little bit better, Kat and Jeff went out on their regular date night to a local seafood restaurant. And then after this, they went to a sports bar. And this is what I mean. Their marriage is like very solid because they apparently do this date night supremely regularly. Like every 2 weeks, they go on a date night. Their daughter goes to the grandparents. They're like not in a shithouse marriage, you know?
Doesn't seem that way.
And so after the seafood restaurant, they head on to, like we said, a sports bar. They're having fun. The daughter's with the grandparents. They're going to get drunk. The pair were then later caught on CCTV stopping off at a local store for some more booze. Specifically, it seems that they picked up a bottle of Jameson's whiskey and a bottle of Lucid Absinthe. That's a lot of booze for date night.
I feel like if you're purchasing absinthe, you're like, my aim is to get as fucked as I possibly can.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is like not necessarily the best look.
So they head back with these bottles to their house and the drinks continue. And after about six drinks, Jeff took some photos of Kat wearing a pink sports bra, multicoloured knickers and pink stilettos. Again, I'm like, you've been married 14 years and they're still getting drunk, taking pictures in their lingerie. I'm like, that's nice.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know if I will make it that long. I think I'll be like, mate, we've been married for 14 years. Let's just watch the next like murder mystery show and drink some hot chocolate. I don't know. I don't think I have the stamina for all of this, but they are in it. And it's speculated, although vehemently denied by Jeff, that the pictures Jeff took of Kat in her underwear could have been the cause of an argument that erupted between the two of them. But unfortunately, why we only have Jeff's version of events is because these photos were the last known pictures taken of Kat while she was alive, because her body was discovered the next morning. And like we said at the top of this episode, Kat was found lying face down in the gutter only a few yards from her house, with two pools of blood formed around her. She had suffered a serious head injury, and it was later determined that she had died of a fracture to her skull. There wasn't any signs of sexual assault, though it was later discovered that Kat had engaged in sexual activity, most likely consensual, shortly before she died. Her blood alcohol level was also deemed to be 0.23, which is three times over the legal limit to drive. So when the police arrived, they obviously take a look at the scene, and at 5:15, so literally like moments after they arrive at the scene of the crime, Alabama police were knocking on the door of the West family home. Jeff came to the door and he was met by two officers telling him the news of Kat's death. Body cam footage of the exchange has since been reviewed at trial by several body language experts, who all unanimously concluded that Jeff's reaction was, quote, atypical of a person who has just found out that their significant other has passed away.
I have literally minus time for body language experts. Like, where did you go to university to know? Sorry. Like, and it's always in like fucking trash tabloids where they're like, oh, look at the way Kate Middleton is like turning her back. Fuck you. I don't care. I don't believe it's a thing. I don't believe it's a profession. Sorry.
I don't believe it's a thing either. I will admit that I've like watched stuff, you know, true crime documentaries where they're talking about it, and I'll be like, oh, that's interesting, and I'll watch it. But I'm like, this is all just fucking bullshit. Like, this is just such like trash analysis. I don't care.
Yeah, it's like handwriting experts and stuff. They'll be like, oh, well, like this person has loopy L's, which means their dad died alone while holding a dog. Like, it's all like, it's just, no, it's just fucking bullshit. It's bullshit.
I agree. And I like have a lot of issues with this case, which I'll come on to talk about at the end. But I think this whole thing of just saying that he didn't look as upset or his body language wasn't the right way it should have been when he was told about his wife being found dead. I'm just like, we've talked about this time and time again. There is no right or wrong way to behave when you're being given news like that. It's just so subjective.
That's exactly what I think.
So anyway, basically the point was that Jeff seemed incredibly calm about the whole thing. and he established a narrative almost immediately that Kat must have fallen over after drinking too much the night before. I do find it quite odd, though, that if your wife is lying in the street dead, just like yards from your house, how have you not been like she's missing, just opened the door or looked outside the window and seen her body?
Yeah, no, that is weird. And also, like, she's naked.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What is that about? Like, no, I think he's extremely suspicious, but like his body language is not the thing that's selling me.
No, definitely, definitely very, very suspicious. And you can understand why suspicions were raised, for sure. So like we said, Jeff says it's just an accident, and it could have been an accident because, you know, Kat was very, very drunk, like we said. But the police felt that there was something odd about the scene, almost staged. For example, there was a liquor bottle found at the scene next to Kat's body, but the liquor bottle was actually like standing on top of her phone. If you fall, it's going to be very, very unlikely that the liquor bottle is just going to land sitting on top of your phone. That's weird. I don't know about that. Obviously, there are other reasons it could have ended up like that. She could have put it down like that, and then as she was crouching down to put it like that, she could have fallen. I don't know, but it's worth mentioning. So the autopsy that was done on Kat ruled that her death was caused by blunt force trauma to the head. But, and this is interesting, due to Kat's petite height, because she was only 5'2", so she's like the same height as me, they said that it was unlikely that the head wound could have been created by a fall.
That's not someone who's fallen over.
Because you're just not that far away from the ground when you're 5'2".
Yeah, totally. Like, there's no time for you to pick up the kind of force to create it. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm 5'8". Like, I think I'd probably hurt myself a bit more than you would falling over.
I definitely think so.
Head injury-wise, because I've got farther to go.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's exactly what they say. Falling from her height wouldn't have caused a head injury that significant, like the one that killed her. The other thing that was really interesting at the scene is that the length of the wound in Kat's head was consistent with the size of the bottle that was found at the scene. The bottle also had Kat's blood on it, so like it does seem like it could very much be the weapon that had killed her. The bottle, they say, also had Jeff's fingerprints on it. I'm like, he was drinking as well.
Yeah, they lived together. Like, I don't think that's
particularly
incriminating at all.
No, and they do say, like, they find his fingerprints in quote-unquote incriminating places on the bottle. And they imply that it's like the way in which someone would hold the bottle if they were going to hit someone with it. So I presume they mean the fingerprints are around the neck of the bottle like this, as if he's going to strike somebody. But then if you just drop your arm, that can also just be the way you would hold a bottle if you were holding it around the neck.
Yeah.
It's not damning for me. So the police, you know, they feel very suspicious about Jeff from the start, but they do realise that Kat has this OnlyFans page, and they decide to look into whether, you know, she had any kind of crazy stalkers on there or anything like that. But after what seems like possibly not a thorough enough investigation, they decide that they can't find anything and they go after Jeff. And so a month later, on Thursday, the 22nd of February 2018, Jeff West was arrested and charged with the murder of his wife. His bond was set at $500,000 and he pleaded not guilty. And this is where I think it gets quite interesting, because at this point, prosecutors already know that they don't have a very strong case, and I don't feel like they felt very confident about taking this case to trial. So they offered Jeff what's known as an Alfred deal. And this is basically like when somebody pleads no contest. Essentially, it would ask you to say that you maintain that you are not guilty, but that you accept that the state has enough evidence to convict you, and therefore you'll take the plea deal. And if Jeff had taken this plea deal that had been offered to him at this point, he would have been released immediately and sent home. And they would have just put him on probation for 2 years. That's all that would have happened to him. But he refuses. He says absolutely not. And so he spent the next 2 years in prison, so from 2018 to 2020, awaiting trial. Bear in mind, by that point, he could have been done with probation if he'd taken the plea deal. At this point, again, the prosecutors are like, we really don't feel that confident. They offered him yet another plea deal to just go home. And again, he says no, and he says he wants to go to trial. That is worth pointing out, I feel like.
Oh, totally. I think, like, I can kind of see Because like it's an easy like bargaining thing of like, oh, like he would have been done. He would have been done on probation and blah, blah, blah. But he would have been a convicted murderer.
Yeah.
And like that comes with its own lifelong consequences. I can understand, I mean, assuming he didn't do it, which I don't know, but like I can see why he would be like, no, I'm taking this to trial, especially if the prosecution is so unsure they've offered you two plea deals. Like, I think you're going to feel confident.
That's also true. I do think at this point it was murder that they were going after. We'll see that that changes again because the prosecution not very confident about this. So like we said, Jeff is like, I'm going to see this through to trial. And so last year in 2020, the trial finally kicked off. And the prosecution's argument at trial was basically that Jeff was sick of Kat's OnlyFans antics and that he hit his wife over the head with the absinthe bottle and then arranged the scene outside of their house. Okay. I mean, I don't know, obviously, what happened. We weren't there. But I'm like, if you were going to do it and then try to cover it up, would you just leave her outside the house?
And also, like, it's just such a bait fucking deep south response, yep, of being like, oh, like she was an empowered, sexually active woman. Her husband must have hated that. Like, yep, it must have been this huge rift in their marriage, like blah, 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 blah.
Despite all the evidence that it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. They were just like, of course. He was probably even annoyed that she was making more money than him. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all of these like really basic arguments.
Absolutely. Another thing that was brought up at trial was that they said that Jeff had crime scene investigator training and therefore would have known how to make it look like an accident. If that's the case, he didn't do a very fucking good job because the bottle was standing up on top of her fucking phone. I just am like, where's this coming from?
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole thing is very confusing. A medical expert also testified again at trial that Kat's head injury was too severe to have been caused by a fall because she was too short. They also said because there were two pools of blood, it looked like it would have been unlikely that she would have fallen and then been able to stand up again and then drip the second bit of blood. So it looks like it was because somebody else was there and somebody else was involved that there were two pools of blood. Again, there's not really enough information out there to like really dig into this, but I don't know. It seems very weak. The whole thing seems very weak. And in November 2020, after just 5 hours of deliberation, the jury found Jeff not guilty of murder, but guilty of a last-minute charge that the prosecution had thrown into the mix, reckless manslaughter. During the sentencing in February this year, so 2021, Jeff spoke out about all he'd missed out on while he'd been in prison. And people made a big deal that he didn't mention his wife by name, although in a separate address, the 47-year-old did say that he lost his best friend. Jeff was sentenced to 16 years and will apparently get credit for the 3 years he's already served. So it's likely, you know, he'll serve roughly 10 to 13 years in prison. They had a daughter as well, who's just like now completely on her fucking own, which is miserable. The lawyer has said that there will be an appeal because Jeff still maintains his innocence. Look, I don't know. I obviously don't know if he did it or not. But I think that given how weak the case was, that the prosecution were offering multiple plea deals, I don't know if I would have been convinced beyond a reasonable doubt of this.
No, I'm not sure I would have been either. I think it was just the complete lack of alternatives that the defense like managed to pull out.
Exactly. And I feel like they didn't really dig into the idea that, you know, there was some crazy fan. Because, yeah, I get the idea is like, if it wasn't Jeff, then who was it? But like, could it not have been somebody? Like, Kat is pretty famous. If she had like 52,000 followers on Instagram, there's people who are going to recognize her. And she is in an industry where she is posting on a page where it's going to attract a certain type of person.
Seemingly innocuous teenager. She was apparently very popular, straight A student. She was born in like the, I want to say in like the 70s in the US. I should have written down her birthday. I didn't because there are bigger facts to get on with. But anyway, she's relatively normal, but from quite a young age, like a late teens, early 20s, she starts meeting people on the internet, right? And so she can't be that old because she's got the internet in her late teens, early 20s. Then she starts going to meet these people and she comes back home and she starts talking about things like spaceships and aliens and all of this, frankly, quite unbelievable stuff, right? Then let's fast forward a little bit. She gets married three times, divorces three times. She has three children. And then in 2006, she was working in a McDonald's and she suddenly quit her job one day and declared herself to be, and this is quote, Mother God.
How do you like the sound of a bank that's built for you, not the 1%? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, you should check out Chime. Chime isn't just another banking app. They unlock smarter banking for everyday people with products like MyPay, giving you access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime and getting paid up 2 days early with direct deposit. They also don't charge an overdraft or minimum balance fee, so you're in control of how you spend your money. In fact, there's no monthly fee at all. Instead of charging you to use your own money, Chime actually turns everyday spending into real rewards and progress. It's the new way to build credit history with your own money and get rewarded every single day. Plus, you can earn up to 3% APY on savings, which is 7 times higher than a traditional bank. Several of my mates have already switched to Chime for their everyday spending, and they say that they have never felt more in control of their money. Chime is not just smarter banking. It's the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It just takes a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/redhanded. That's chime.com/redhanded. Starting something new can be exciting, but also terrifying. When we started Red Handed, we had no idea if anyone would actually want to listen to two mates who barely knew each other banging on about true crime for an hour. But nearly a decade later, I know in my heart and in my bum that we were totally right to believe in ourselves and launch that podcast from that weird kitchen, despite all of the horrifying fear. It also helps when you have a partner like Shopify on your side. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Gymshark and Mattel to those just getting started. You want people to learn about your brand? Shopify creates emails and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. It's like you've got a marketing team behind you, even if it's just you and your laptop, or maybe your cat. And if you get stuck, Shopify's always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. It's time to turn those what-ifs into today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/redhanded. Go to shopify.com/redhanded. That is shopify.com/redhanded.
This time of year, as I'm running from recording to meeting to catching up with my friends, I am so thankful for my wardrobe staples. Those things I can reach for over and over without having to constantly think about what I'm going to wear. Those items that elevate pretty much every outfit. And those that work for me on those days when the weather just won't make up its mind. And honestly, that's why I love Quince. Quince is all about elevated essentials that feel effortless. Everything is designed to mix, layer, and last, so that you're building a timeless wardrobe instead of chasing trends. I'm definitely eyeing up one of their 100% organic cotton sweaters. Everything is built to hold up season after season. The stitching, the fit, the fabrics. These pieces are ones you'll reach for over and over. And the quality honestly speaks for itself. Quince works directly with safe, ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're not paying ridiculous brand markups. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/redhanded to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/redhanded.
She says, I, Amy Carlson, am Mother God. Okay. Right. She quits her job in McDonald's, like I said, and she runs off and she starts a new age group, which is the best kind of group, really,
yeah,
of late. And it's called Love Has Won. That's the name of this this new age group that she started. Okay. And she quickly amasses like a little tight-knit following of some very extreme people. They start doing daily live streams on the internet. Daily live streams. That's something.
They should give us some tips.
I mean, mate, how you got the energy to do that, I don't fucking know. But, you know, if you're Mother God, maybe it's fine. Yeah. So she's doing
Mother God was sent to live stream.
Absolutely. That's the way, you know. You don't just like go chat in fucking local village halls anymore. Just get yourself a Twitch account, start live streaming that shit. Bang. Perfect. Bing, bang, bong. Cult. I don't know. Anyway, so she starts getting money like financial donations from all over the world, like in the thousands. Again, I'm just like,
how does she have a Patreon?
Don't know. I don't
following
know
the red-handed model of
I know.
Financial exploitation. I'm kidding.
I don't understand the exact specifics of how this was coming through, but just donations. Maybe she had a website through her live stream, and maybe she had like a super fan thing on YouTube. Who knows? Then she's Mother God. Within this cult, there are then several men who she names Father God. And it seems that these men were the men that she was having sexual relationships with within the cult. Okay. So then this cult, so like I said, this was in 2006, so about, you know, 15 years ago. They move around quite a bit. They moved to Hawaii in 2020 because, you know, a cult like the Lori Vallow, the cultists love fucking Hawaii. Maybe it's because
I will say though, like I'm so far, I'm here for the matriarchy of it. Like,
Yeah. We'll come back to that.
She's telling the men what to do. I'm here for it.
She's telling them all what to do because she is Mother God.
Multiple husbands. You don't see it enough.
No, you don't. We don't talk about this kind of thing enough. So yeah, like as far as that goes, yeah, fine. Kudos to her and her harem of father gods that she's got around her. So yeah, she and the group head off to Hawaii in 2020. But there, the people of the town they move into absolutely fucking hate Love Has One. They are like, no way. The mayor orders them to get out of the town and they get police escorted out of this town, which I thought was hysterical.
To be honest, Hawaii's probably fucking sick of nut job showing up and starting communes.
Like, you would be. I feel like they have a protocol for how to deal with it by this point. So they get kicked out of Hawaii. Then they come back to like mainland US and they kind of move around. They live in California for a bit. Then they move to Colorado. And Colorado is where they go to in April 2021. So we're talking like literally like last month. We're recording this in May 2021. And here they met a man named Miguel. Miguel, I can't tell if he was exactly in the cult or if he was just like a sympathizer or like a peripheral member or what's exactly going on. He doesn't seem to be the most devout, let's just say that. But he does let the cult live in his trailer home in Colorado while he goes away on a trip, which I'm like, that's very trusting of you, but okay. When he gets back from this trip, Amy Carlson, Mother God, is dead. But the rest of the cult members are still in the trailer home. And she's also in the trailer home. And when we say dead, she's been dead for at least a month. So she probably died like as soon as he left. She's severely decomposed, obviously. I don't know how hot it is April in Arizona, but I don't think it's cool.
Boiling. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Even more horrific. It gets worse. Her eyes are missing. Yeah. Her face is covered in glitter. And she's in a shrine that the cult members have built and it's covered in Christmas lights. Yeah.
Like when the monks like mummify themselves.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. And the cult members are just hanging around this body. So Miguel's like, what the fuck? And so his kid is there and he tries to take his kid away and the cult members won't let him take his child. So he goes to the police, tells them what's going on. The police come. They find this fucking corpse of this Mother God woman. They arrest seven of the cult members, which again, I don't know. Like we've always talked about trailers before on this show. Like, is that what was a double wide or was that an RV? I don't know.
It's definitely a trailer.
Okay, good. So this could be like quite a big trailer. I don't know. But there are at least seven people, two children and a corpse in this trailer at one time, which is quite something from what I can visualize. But it's happening. So like I said, the police come, they arrest seven people and they're all charged with child abuse because there was Miguel's son and another child who were both in the trailer. Neither of the children were harmed. It is important to say that, but they were being exposed to some pretty fucking crazy shit. So they're charged with child abuse. They're also charged with tampering with deceased human remains and the abuse of a corpse. This bit is interesting because they argue that it wasn't abuse of a human corpse because Amy Carlson isn't really dead. They say that Amy Carlson, the 45-year-old Mother God cult leader, And this all comes directly from their beliefs and what they have been quoted as saying, that Amy Carlson had been trying to save humanity for 19 billion years, which for most of you will realize that that's far older even than the universe, not even just how long humanity has been around. That's older than the best estimates for when the Big Bang happened. So she's been trying to save humanity for a really fucking long time, basically, according to them. They also said that she has been reincarnated over 500 times, once as Jesus and once as Marilyn Monroe.
All right. Why, with all of your knowledge, presumably being the omnipotent mother god, Marilyn Monroe is a bad choice. She had a miserable fucking life. And then she really died.
She, like, really did.
It's an odd choice.
Why wouldn't you
be like desperately trying to search for a happy person and struggling?
Me too. Who was having a great time? I don't know. We'll come back to that.
I feel like Tom Hanks probably has a pretty good time.
There you go. Why not come back as Tom Hanks?
I probably would come back as Tom Hanks. He lives on Antiparos. He's Greek now.
He's having a great time, you know? and they also said about Amy Carlson, Mother God, that she had earned a level of full consciousness, something that no one else has ever been able to achieve. Her followers also said that she was literally the planet. I don't understand this. Did you ever watch that terribly, terribly, terribly obnoxious film Mother! Exclamation mark.
No. Is it the Jennifer Lawrence one?
It is the Jennifer Lawrence
one. Then no. I think I've watched a Guillermo del Toro that's called like Mama, maybe.
Yeah. Yes. Mama's good. Mama's a good horror film.
Yeah.
Mother! Exclamation mark is trash.
I avoided that.
It's the most bait shit. It's like she's called Mother, and she's Mother Nature, and her husband's called him, and he's anyway. Fucking fuck that shit. Don't watch it. But anyway, that's what this feels like, right? They also said that she felt the pain, collective pain, and collective feelings of everyone on the planet. They also said she could speak to angels. Apparently she was going to lead the chosen ones to a great awakening in the fifth dimension. Don't know what that means. But what I do know is that to become a chosen one, all you had to do was pay her a bunch of money, which is convenient, isn't it? And quite easy.
It usually is a bunch of money.
Yes.
They don't tend to want anything else. But they all managed to get laid all the fucking time.
Oh, all the fucking time.
She's getting it left, right, and centre. And I can't even get a fucking text back. What the fuck?
Maybe he needs to start a cult.
You know what? I'm this fucking close.
I think you should, because there's not enough women representing in the cult zone.
No, there isn't.
Which is why it's so important to talk about Amy Carlson and Mother God.
All voted for the Broken Arrow killings. So at around 11:30 p.m. on the 22nd of July 2015, emergency dispatchers received a call from a mobile phone. On the other end, they heard the voice of a young boy quietly begging for help. In the background, they could hear screaming and muffled voices. And a few seconds later, the line went dead. The call was traced to 709 Magnolia Court in the upscale neighborhood of Broken Arrow in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Not to immediately destroy the tension that I'm building, but Broken Arrow. Is this one of those Native American name-stealing jobs?
It is. I looked it up. So I had a look on what I would assume is the equivalent of what we would call the council. I don't know what the American word is.
Mm.
It's called Broken Arrow because of Native Americans, obviously. And they go into detail of what particular tribe of Native Americans lived there first. But they don't say Native Americans. On this official government website, it says Indians. So...
Still?
Yeah. I'll link it below. I was quite shocked by that.
I thought we were over this, guys. I thought we were over this.
Apparently not.
Clearly.
Wasn't it just Christopher Columbus being like, oh, I just thought this was India, or is that completely made up? Like, why is it that?
I thought it was just they were like, they're brown and their skin has kind of got red undertones to it. So we'll just call them, they're like those brownies we met over when we went east. But they've just got more of a red undertone rather than a yellow undertone. So we'll call them Red Indians. I don't know, maybe that's completely incorrect, but that feels like Occam's razor feels like the most logical explanation for why Native Americans are called Red Indians. Not by us and not by anyone affiliated with this show, but apparently by an official government website. So, okay, cool. But anyway, back to Broken Arrow in Tulsa County, Oklahoma. So once they traced this 911 call back to 709 Magnolia Court, the police then attempted to contact the phone of the owner of the house, a man named David Bevers. When they called the mobile, someone picked up the phone, but quickly disconnected. So a police unit was immediately sent to the property to investigate what was going on. As officers approached the house, they found the front porch was covered in blood, at which point they obviously immediately called for backup. When they knocked on the front door, they heard a faint voice from inside, crying, "Help me, please help me."
After forcing their way in, the officers found 13-year-old Crystal Bevers lying on the floor. She was losing an alarming amount of blood by the second. Her throat had been slit and she had suffered multiple stab wounds to her arms and stomach. The wounds were so severe that some of her internal organs were protruding from her abdomen.
Definitely, again, a no-eating episode because the whole organs protruding from stab wounds sadly becomes quite a common occurrence in this episode.
And you can't be mad because you literally asked for it.
Precisely.
Despite this injury, unbelievably, Crystal was still alive, and she managed to tell the officers that she'd been attacked by two of her brothers. Crystal was taken to hospital while officers drew their guns and proceeded through the house. Following the trail of blood that was splattered across the floors, walls, and even ceilings, the scene of the crime they had just walked in on would go on to be described as the single worst criminal event in the history of Broken Arrow, apart from the genocide of the Native Americans, obviously.
Of the ones that are recognized and talked about, I'm sure. At the top of the staircase, the officers discovered the body of 44-year-old April Bever, who had been subjected to more than 48 stab wounds to her neck, head, torso, arms, and hands. And I know we've said this on this show before, but stab wounds to the head, they really are just the worst thing I want to talk about or read or write down or research.
I don't know why you would stab someone in the head. Like, in the ear, I understand. But, like,
no.
Yeah, my BFF Robert Maudsley, the old spoon in the ear trick, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why you would try and stab someone in the head. It must be quite difficult to do.
I feel like it's just the idea of stabbing someone in like a bony part of their body. I also don't like the idea of stabbing people in their hands.
Oh, no.
Just, I mean, don't stab anyone anywhere, but the head and the hands, it's not nice. I don't like it. Don't do it. So not far from April's bleeding body, officers also found the body of her husband, 52-year-old David Bever, who had been stabbed at least 28 times in the torso, face, arms, neck, and hands. And if you think that this is all bad, prepare yourselves because the worst is yet to come. In the upstairs bedroom, the police discovered the bodies of 5-year-old Victoria Bever and 7-year-old Christopher Bever, who had both again been stabbed around 20 times in their backs and chests. A forensic pathologist would later detail in court that the attack on the young children had been carried out with such ferocity that their internal organs were found, quote, spewed across the bathroom floor. I mean, they've just been, like, eviscerated. That's the only way. I mean, to even stab a 5-year-old 20 times, I'm like, where is there space on a 5-year-old's body to stab them 20 times? It's a, like, incredibly brutal massacre. So, if you guys enjoyed that and you want to hear a lot more of that kind of content, then just head on over to patreon.com/redhandednow to take a look for yourself and become a patron.